Hello and welcome to The More You Know. I'm your host Pickles, and for the next hour we'll be talking about world, national, and local news, and we'll be talking about some social issues later on in the show. To begin with, let's start off Flight 370, the pings that have not been heard since this last weekend. The pulses that an Australian Navy ship detected over the weekend from a remote location in the Indian Ocean have not been picked up since, but authorities are not letting that deter them in the search for Malaysia Airlines Flight 370. "We have at least several days of intense actions ahead of us," said Australian Defence Minister David Johnson, who told reporters Tuesday, "We're throwing everything at this difficult, complex task." Investigators hope the signals were from locator beacons that were attached to the data and voice recorders in the tail of the Boeing 770-200ER when it disappeared from radar screens on March 8th, carrying 239 people on a flight from Kuala Lumpur to Beijing. Buoyed by the hope that they're closing in on the beacons, they reduced the search area Tuesday. The current focus is a 30,000 square mile range of the Indian Ocean, about 1,400 miles northwest of Perth. That's about a third of the size of the previous search zone. Instead of looking at an area the size of Texas, they're now looking in an area the size of Houston. Time, however, is looming as a factor. The batteries powering the beacons, which are designed to emit signals when submerged in saltwater, are certified to last 30 days. And this next Tuesday will mark 32. Experts have said the batteries could last longer if they were fully charged when the plane disappeared. Air Chief Marshal Angus Houston, the chief of the Australian agency coordinating the search, said that we need to continue for several days right up to when the point at which there's absolutely no doubt that the pinger batteries will have expired. Retired Royal Air Force Lieutenant Colonel Michael Kay predicted the search for the pingers would continue for another week and a half. "We know that the batteries can last up to 40 days," Kay told CNN. "If I was Angus Houston, I would be putting the search out to at least 42 or 43 days to make sure that the batteries have failed." The race against time is the number one challenge that searchers face. Navy Commander William Marks told CNN, "We haven't quit since we initially heard these signals. We've been continuously working around the clock, and we haven't been able to reacquire them." Searchers are still scouring the waters, but their optimism is more cautious now. "As hours pass, our optimism is fading, ever so slightly," said Kay. Major challenges occur, but the search area still presents major challenges. The location is deep, and a cyclone that packed wind speeds of more than 160 miles per hour churned through the area 2 weeks ago when the crews were focused elsewhere in the Indian Ocean. In doing so, it would have further spread any debris. Meteorologist Chad Myers says this was an area that looked like a washing machine in the first place, but now we know it was even worse than that. The weather on Tuesday was calm, with no major systems near where the pings had been detected. Cheers erupted Saturday when the team aboard Australia's Ocean Shield first detected a possible signal from one of the plane's recorders. The Australian ship is equipped with two key pieces of U.S. equipment to scan the water for signs of the plane: a towed pinger locator and a Bluefin 21 underwater vehicle. The first detection continued for more than 2 hours, the second for about 13 minutes. The signals detected about 1,750 kilometers, 1,100 miles, northwest of Perth, Australia, were consistent with those sent by a flight data recorder and a cockpit voice recorder. They were heard in seawater of about 4,500 meters or 14,800 feet deep. Houston says, "The audible signal sounds to me just like an emergency locator beacon. We are encouraged that we are very close to where we need to be." If they are heard again, searchers could deploy an underwater drone to take photos to determine whether they do indeed signal the discovery of the so-called black boxes. That process could take more than a week. Houston went on, "Until we have stopped the pinger search, we will not deploy the submersible. We will not deploy it unless we get another transmission in which we'll probably have a better idea of what's down there. Teams are also still investigating pulses detected Friday and Saturday by a Chinese ship about 600 kilometers or 375 miles southwest of where the Ocean Shield is searching. The signals detected by the Chinese weren't as sustained as those picked up by the Ocean Shield, and the Chinese vessel's detection gear isn't thought to be as advanced as the U.S. pinger locator. Houston said Monday that there were probably separate events, pointing out that the length of the search area where they were detected exceeds 300 nautical miles. But some friends and relatives of passengers said they were keeping their hopes in check. One of the passengers' family members, the partner of American passenger Philip Wood, said until they physically locate the bulk of the plane with the black box intact and passenger bodies, I won't believe it. At a candlelight vigil in Beijing on Monday night, some relatives sobbed and others bowed their heads. The husband of one passenger said, "If the plane is still there, it's there. We can't change it. But I am still hoping for a miracle to happen." Let's all keep the passengers and the families of Flight 370 in our thoughts this weekend. Next, Ukraine clears some protesters in eastern cities while there's standoff elsewhere. The International Monetary Fund cut its 2014 economic growth forecast for Russia by two-thirds on Wednesday and warned that downside risks remain on geopolitical uncertainties after Moscow's takeover of Crimea. The fund cut its gross domestic product growth forecast to 1.3% from an earlier 2%, revising down its estimates for the third time in a row from an initial 3%. The balance of risks for Russia and neighbors remains to be the downside, considering rising geopolitical uncertainties following the takeover of the Crimea by Russia, tightening financial conditions and volatile capital flows. Intensification of sanctions and counter-sanctions could affect trade flows and financial assets. The IMF forecast follows gloomier estimates from the World Bank of the likely economic damage from the Kremlin's standoff with the West over Ukraine. The bank warned the Russian economy may contract by 1.8% if the conflict escalates and growth by 1.1% at best. The IMF is also more optimistic in its GDP growth estimates than the Russian Economy Ministry, which said earlier this month that economic expansion may come significantly below 1% if current trends continue. The United States and European Union have imposed asset freezes and visa bans on a group of Russians and threatened economic sanctions if Moscow escalates the crisis further. The standoff is estimated to result in up to $70 billion in capital flight from Russia in the first quarter. The World Bank says capital outflow may come to $150 billion if the crisis deepens. The IMF has not provided estimates of how much money could flee Russia this year. The fund said Russia's slowdown would have a spillover effect on former Soviet republics such as Kazakhstan, Armenia, and Tajikistan. A slowdown in Russia owing to unsettled conditions would affect the Caucasus and Central Asia through both real sector and financial channels, particularly if energy supply is disrupted and oil and gas prices rise. Consumer price inflation is likely to average 5.8% this year, the IMF said, and is likely to remain above 5%, the midpoint of Russia's target range, by year-end. The central bank said last month that inflation is likely to come at between 5 and 6% by year-end, within its 3.5 to 6.5% target range, but above the midpoint. The ruble's weakening was the main reason for the rise in annual inflation last month to 6.9% from 6.2% a month earlier. Russia should continue to rely on exchange rate flexibility to facilitate adjustments while avoiding excessive volatility, keep monetary policy focused on anchoring inflation, and maintain a broadly neutral structural fiscal policy, the fund said. The Russian central bank was forced in March to raise its key lending rate by 150 basis points to 7% to stem off capital flight after Russia asserted its right to intervene militarily in Ukraine. The bank also introduced temporary changes to its rules that enable larger forex market interventions. It expanded some $25 billion to support the ruble in March, putting on hold plans to make the ruble more flexible. Last week, central bank governor said the bank did not plan to cut its key lending rate until its June meeting at the earliest, as inflation concerns remain. The ruble is down 7% against the dollar this year, after falling 11% in March at the peak of the crisis. And now let's take a little break, and here is one of my favorite songs. It's This Little Light of Mine by Pete Seeger.
Tell you what, even if you never heard it before, you can sing it with me. You just repeat that line so I make sure you all know it.
This little light of mine. Second line goes, I'm gonna let it shine. Try that. I'm gonna let it shine. This little light of mine, I'm gonna let it shine. Try that. This little light of mine, I'm gonna let it shine. This little light of mine.
Now this has some fancy harmony. Do we have some tenors here or basses?
I'm gonna let it, I'm gonna let it shine. Let it shine, let it shine, let it shine.
Tell you what. If we're going to sing this, we got to really sing on it. And we really got to get some harmony on it. If you can't sing high, you can sing low. If you're a monotone, you just hit the middle and stay there. Everybody. High voice, this little light of mine,
I'm gonna let it shine. This little light of mine, I'm gonna let it shine. This little light of mine, I'm gonna let it shine. Let it shine, let it shine, let it shine.
And where's the basses?
This little light of mine,
I'm gonna let it shine. That's a little bit wrong.
This little light of mine, if I can get that other clamp out here.
Basses, altos.
This little light of mine, I'm gonna let it shine. This little light of mine, I'm gonna let it shine. This little light of mine, I'm gonna let it shine. That's a very important note. Let it shine, let it shine, let it shine.
Now you're the rock foundation. Don't you collapse and we all fall on top of you. Now it's every man and woman for the self. If you hear someone singing high, you sing low, and vice versa. And here we go. Everyone.
Freedom, I'm gonna let it shine. I'll repeat, I've got
flag of mine. I'm gonna let it shine, this red light of mine. I'm gonna, oh, let it shine, this red light of mine. I'm gonna let it shine, let it shine, let it shine, let it shine. All over Mississippi, I'm gonna let it shine. I'm gonna let it shine all over Pennsylvania. I'm gonna let it shine all over Pennsylvania. I'm gonna let it shine, let it shine, let it shine, let it shine. Oh, this little light, oh, this little light of mine. I'm gonna, oh, this little light of mine. I'm gonna let it shine.
Welcome back to The More You Know. I'm your host, Pickles, and you're listening to radio.dominican.edu. This is Penguin Radio. Now, to start off with, we just talked about some world news, and we're going to go on and talk about some national news now, so specific to the U.S. And to begin with, we have a lot of health, medicine, and fitness news to begin with. So to begin with, the first prescription treatment that can be used by family members or caregivers to treat an overdose of narcotic painkillers was approved by the FDA last week. The treatment is called Evzio, and it is a handheld auto-injector that delivers a single dose of the drug naloxone into the muscle or beneath the skin. It is meant as an emergency treatment only and not for everyday use. This treatment will counteract the effects of narcotics such as Oxycontin, Vicodin, and Percocet. FDA Commissioner Margaret Hamburg said in an agency statement, "Tragically, the most recent data shows that more than 16,000 lives are lost each year due to opioid-related overdoses. In fact, drug overdose deaths driven largely by prescription drug overdose deaths are now the leading cause of injury death in the United States, surpassing motor vehicle crashes. It is the hopes of many that this new treatment will save lives by facilitating earlier use of the drug, naloxone. Just a reminder though, this treatment is not a substitute for immediate medical care. It is only an emergency treatment." On Tuesday, four men who were previously paralyzed below the waist regained movement in their legs. The four men had a series of electrodes implanted along their spinal cords, which reawakened nerves that were long thought to be dead. This electrical stimulation has given the men the ability to voluntarily flex their toes, ankles, and knees. With intense physical rehabilitation, their strength and precision of the movements just related have improved over time. The director of the National Institute of Biomedical Imaging and Bioengineering at the U.S. National Institutes of Health explained, "The really exciting news that has just emerged from the study is that the spinal cord injury may no longer mean a lifelong sentence of paralysis. This is a substantial milestone that has been reached." This is a great milestone, but there's lots of more research needing to be done and larger test groups. Now, growing up, my parents always encouraged me to drink milk, saying that it would help make my bones strong. Luckily, I loved milk and used to drink it by the gallon until I found out I was lactose intolerant. But a new study was released on Monday by the U.S. National Heart, Lung, and Blood Institute that is making me glad that I listened to them. The studies show that low-fat or fat-free milk may be a useful weapon against arthritis of the knee for women. Unfortunately, men who drink the same amount of milk saw no change in the speed of arthritis progression. Curiously enough, though, eating cheese or yogurt did not have the same effect on women as one might think, since they all have similar amounts of calcium. The study concluded that women who ate higher amounts of cheese had the opposite effect of milk, speeding up the progression of knee arthritis in women. Taking in higher amounts of yogurt had no effect on the arthritis in either women or men. Now, in light of the Relay for Life happening here at Dominican this weekend, here are five things you need to know about running an overnight relay. While our Relay for Life is not exactly a running, it's still an interesting thing to know for the future. First off, it's not the mileage, it's the format. Training as much as you want is going to help you, but running at 2:30 a.m. has a lot more to do with mental toughness than with physical endurance. Second, eat lots of small meals. You have to keep yourself fueled, but you don't want to load up on carbs in between the different legs. So, when you have a break, eat a small meal, such as almonds or energy bars, or a bagel with peanut butter, just healthy snacks, and don't eat, sit down and have a large meal, because you get lethargic and have a harder time running. Third, find a spot where you can recharge. Stopping to rest for an hour or so in between legs will make a huge difference. Everyone's going to be tired, and having that little bit of extra boost will help you run faster and longer. Fourth, organize everything. Pack your gear for each leg of your run in separate labeled bags. You might not need a headlamp for your first leg, but you might need it for the third when you're at 2:30 in the morning. You're living out of a duffel bag in a small van, so being able to find your gear quickly and easily is super helpful. And finally, fifth, be prepared to have the best time of your life. The camaraderie you'll feel with your teammates and the other runners in the race is exceptional. Enjoy your time and have fun. If you're going to support the Relay for Life this weekend, remember these tips and remember, have fun, and you're all there for the same cause, and so you're going to have a lot of similar people. Next, UFO spotters are very excited about this suspicious NASA photo from Mars. An image transmitted from Mars to Earth by NASA's Curiosity rover has some alien enthusiasts seeing the artificial light about the possibility of life on Mars. The image, visible at the Raw Images database from NASA's Jet Propulsion Laboratory, depicts what appears to be a white speck of something in its upper left-hand portion. Curiosity snapped the image shortly after arriving at the Kimberley waypoint on April 2nd. Over the past few days, UFO spotting blogs have picked up the image as a sign that something is out there. UFOs Sightings Daily's Scott C. Waring, for instance, wrote this over the weekend about the image. An artificial light source was seen this weekend in this NASA photo, which shows light shining upward from the ground. This could indicate that there is intelligent life below the ground and uses light as we do. This is not a glare from the sun, nor is it an artifact of the photo process. Look closely at the bottom of the light. It has a very flat surface, giving us 100% indication it is from the surface. Sure, NASA could go in and investigate it, but hey, they are not on Mars to discover life, but there to stall its discovery. And YouTube user The Life Beyond Earth set the image to New Age music. In one of the close-up of the image, the user writes, "This close-up seems to reveal a hole or shadow beneath the light. Could it be an underground base?" So what is it? The Jet Propulsion Laboratory has yet to respond officially to press requests, including ours, for some contacts here, but a few people who would know have weighed in already. As NBC News spotted, one JPL employee said the light was probably a cosmic ray hit, an explanation that Surrey Space Center's Doug Ellison agrees with. Cosmic ray hits are a kind of strange space phenomenon. Essentially, space is full of cosmic rays or high-speed atom fragments. They constantly bombard Earth, although we don't really see them. They're almost certainly responsible for flashes of light experienced by astronauts in space, most famously on the Apollo missions. As it turns out, those exposures are not great for long-term eye health. In the case of the light flash above, the Going explanation posits the cosmic ray impacted Curiosity as it took the image seen here. So are aliens shining lights up from their secret underground layers on Mars? Almost certainly not. But that doesn't mean NASA isn't in the middle of some cool projects to explore the possibility of life beyond Earth. There are even some exciting actual discoveries on Mars itself, like this recent evidence that there might currently be flowing water on our neighbor planet. Now, people who say that there's no aliens out there and say that alien enthusiasts are all crazy, do you really think that we're the only thing in this entire universe? Even in our own galaxy, there's so much to space that we can't see or don't know or will never get to. It's just this enormous expanse and it's so hard to wrap your head around, but I find it so hard to believe that we're the only living life forms out here. And now Obamacare's most recent obstacle, confusion. Obama administration officials, hoping to exhale after the big finish to Obamacare's first enrollment season, may need to hold their breath a while longer. All the confusion and mixed messages out there are bound to combust if people decide they were misled. An echo of the, you can keep your plan if you like it, fiasco. If there's been a failing with the Obama administration communication, it's the failure to adequately plan for that kind of extensive, repeated interaction with people at the community level. That's from Larry Jacobs, an expert on health politics at the University of Minnesota. Successful outreach doesn't depend on just one jingle, he stressed. It's repeated and unceasing outreach at multiple levels. Some of the missed points and mixed up details could bite the administration almost immediately as people start using their new plans and blame surprises on the White House. Other lingering public misconceptions could feed Republican attacks through the November midterm elections. Here are six big danger points. 1. I'm sick. Why can't I get covered? Coverage of pre-existing conditions was a big selling point of the law. But not everyone realizes that they can't just sign up the minute a condition is diagnosed. The regular dates and deadlines for enrolling still apply, no matter when you get appendicitis. Yet 6 in 10 uninsured Americans didn't know March 31st was the cutoff for getting 2014 coverage, according to a Kaiser Family Foundation poll last month. They didn't know that missing the deadline meant they'd be locked out until November, unless they're eligible for Medicaid, which has no such restriction. Molly Ann Brody, executive director of public opinion and survey research at Kaiser, said, since they don't even know that there's a deadline, I don't think that they could know the next step, which is that they can't enroll for the rest of the year. It's going to be a shock, and we are going to be fielding a lot of calls. But there's not much you can do to help. One reason for the confusion might have been all those delays and extensions. Just before March 31st, the administration granted people with special circumstances or sign-up difficulties a bit more time. Tom Miller, a fellow at the American Enterprise Institute and a critic of the law, said there's almost an assumption that there's never a real deadline on anything. What's the risk? Anyone who gets sick and thinks they can just waltz in and get insurance is in for a shock. They just might blame it on Obamacare or President Barack Obama. And then, when they get hit with a penalty for not having insurance, they'll be even angrier. 2. The $95 mandate myth. Most people know there's a penalty for being uncovered, but they are wrong about the amount. You have to pause and say, it's not one Ben Franklin, it's probably closer to 3. Said Brian Hale, Senior Vice President for Health Policy at Jackson Hewitt Tax Service Incorporated. Customers constantly walked in and declared that they were going to forego coverage and cough up the $95 penalty, he said. Then they'd learned that it was actually $95 or 1% of income, whichever is greater. In 2016, the amount increases to $695 or 2.5% of income. Hale said, customers will say, well, that's a lot more than what my congressman told me or what I read in the newspaper or heard on television. They're sort of flummoxed. So remember, you're hearing it here on The More You Know. It is not a $95 penalty. It is $95 or 1% of income, whichever is greater, until 2016, when the amount increases to $695 or 2.5% of your income, again, whichever is greater. The government didn't stress the penalty during much of the outreach. I have a strong feeling that the kind of vagueness about the mandate and penalty was deliberate. This comes from Jacobs, the political scientist. It's better to attract people with the benefit than threaten them the IRS is going after them. Cece Cannoli, managing director of the Health Research Institute at PricewaterhouseCoopers, said she's not sure that that was a smart strategy. Her research found that Massachusetts' emphasis on the penalty when its own health reform law took effect motivated people to sign up. Of course, Obamacare won't hit anyone with a fine until Americans start to do their 2014 taxes next year. That means it comes due in 2015, after the November midterms, but in time for the 2016 presidential campaign. And the risk in this? A delayed but nasty surprise at tax time. 3. I can't afford Obamacare. 4 in 10 uninsured Americans still don't know that the Affordable Care Act offers financial assistance to low and moderate income individuals. That's according again to the Kaiser poll. Plus, many of the GOP attacks on the law that people hear about are about its costs. Enroll America found that perception of high costs was the single biggest barrier to enrollment in this first season. Over the course of the enrollment period, the group fine-tuned its messaging to stress the availability of financial help and interest soared. John Gilbert, Enroll's field director, said once the connection is made, the likelihood of those people enrolling goes through the roof. But sometimes people who knew generally about the assistance didn't realize that they themselves might qualify. Christine Barber, a senior policy analyst at Community Catalyst, said, people are really surprised that they can get financial help and that the law can benefit them. And subsidies don't prevent sticker shock for everyone. The aid gets thinner as people move up the sliding income scale. Karen Politz, a senior fellow at Kaiser, says that will be off-putting for some. It's impossible to know how many people never applied for coverage or sidestepped an exchange and bought a policy elsewhere at full cost because they didn't understand how much help was available. So now the risk in this? People who learn that they missed out on a good or a better deal will want to blame someone, and it probably won't be themselves. I'd like to pause here and remember a very famous quote. Ask not what your government can do for you, but ask what you can do for your government. Always remember that the government is not to blame for everything. If you're in trouble, look at how you got there, and then see what you can do to help yourself. Now, back to Obamacare. The fourth problem. 4. Sort of a bait and switch. People who end up making more than they anticipated during the year and don't realize that they should report it may have to pay back some of their tax credit when they file their taxes. But for many people, matching up what they got versus what they should have gotten is going to be highly problematic. Folks who suddenly find their tax refunds reduced may feel like the government has raided their piggy bank, forgetting, of course, that the piggy bank was bigger in the first place because of the financial help and purchasing health insurance. You run the risk of it creating very negative perceptions of the marketplace. Sort of a bait and switch, if you will. And the risk with this? What do you mean I don't get a tax refund? I want my piggy bank. Again, people will be looking to blame someone, and it probably won't be themselves. And 5, it's not free? Many people who signed up for Obamacare are insured for the first time, or the first time in a long time, and they are now confronting an array of befuddling terms. They don't necessarily understand that a monthly premium isn't the only bill they have to pay. The copays, deductibles, and other costs they'll encounter when they go see a provider could be a real shock. Messages get very simplified, and it sounds like enroll in the Affordable Care Act and your worries are over for medical bills, says AEI's Miller. Groups and programs that helped consumers consumers choose a plan say they tried hard to explain it all. For instance, Jody Ray, who oversees the Navigator programs at the University of South Florida, said they were careful about explaining deductibles, copays, and premiums, and when they're used, when they're needed, and when they're going to kick in, and when they're expected to pay them. And they try to connect people to an in-network physician, but it's all still complicated. The risk in this? EOB alarm. Unhappy people who get one of those explanation of benefits statements for the first time. 6. The reality of costs. Remember that save $2,500 on your insurance promise that presidential candidate Obama made in 2008? It took a few different forms and was couched with different time frames. Sometimes it was promised by the end of Obama's first term, but all the nuances of economic modeling and different cost growth curves never made it into the sound bites. People with insurance heard promises of big savings, and except for some on the exchanges, they haven't experienced that. The overall rate of growth in national health spending, including Medicare, has slowed, Connolly noted. But for individuals, neither premiums nor out-of-pocket spending has dropped, most certainly not by the $2,500 that people thought they were promised. It's little comfort that their costs might have been even higher without the healthcare law, if they even understand that. And premiums could go up sharply next year in some or most states, depending on who did get covered this year and how young, old, or sick, or healthy they are. Miller predicted that's another possible premium shock. I don't think it will happen in all 50 states, but I think it'll happen enough to be noticeable. Now the risk, an awful lot of GOP campaign ads blaring another Obamacare broken promise. I hope that was helpful in understanding a little bit more about Obamacare and what you can do and how you should be looking at it and the benefits and what will be the side effects, if you will, of consumers who don't understand how it works. Now let's take another break. You are listening to Penguin Radio on radio.dominican.edu. I am Pickles, and this is The More You Know. And here is Eminem's Underground.
A lot of people ask me where the fuck I've been at last few years. Shit, I don't know. But I do know. I'm back now.
Here comes the rain and thunder now. Nowhere to run, to run to now. I've disappeared, don't wonder how. Looking for me, I'm underground. Here comes the rain and thunder now. Nowhere to run, to run to now. I've disappeared, don't wonder how. Looking for me, I'm underground.
Rain, I'm down here, under the ground, dig me up. Broken tibias, fibias, yeah, fix me up. 60 sluts, all of them dying from asphyxia after they sip piss through a Christopher Reeve sippy cup. Dixie cups, toxins, boxes of oxy pads, enough oxycontin to send a fucking ox to rehab. Whack job in the back in a black stocking cap, jacking off to a hockey mask and a boxing match.
Can't say that.
Yes, he can. I just did, faggot, and I guess again. Better text message your next of kin. Tell him shit's about to get extra messy, especially when I flex.
Actually, let's listen to Boney Bear's Come Talk to Me.
Thank you.
To Penguin Radio on radio.dominican.edu. I'm your host, Pickles, and this is The More You Know. Now, to begin with, let's talk about some social issues. We just talked about some world news and some national news, and now I want to talk about some social issues that are affecting us. So, being from Michigan, it's where a lot of my heart and my interests lie, obviously. It's my home. So I would like to talk about the gay marriage appeal that has just happened in Michigan, although this is a nationwide topic. Recently, gay marriage was legalized in Michigan, and an appeal has brought it back to the Supreme Court. Now, to begin with, let me just go over some what states allow same-sex marriage, which ones are being reviewed, and which ones recognize gay marriages. To begin with, states that allow same-sex marriages are Washington, California, New Mexico, Minnesota, Iowa, Illinois, New York, Maine, Maryland, D.C., Delaware, New Jersey, Connecticut, Rhode Island, Massachusetts, New Hampshire, and Vermont. States, and now these are the states that are going to be being appealed, where appeals courts will rule on the same-sex couple's right to marry. They are Nevada, Utah, Texas, Oklahoma, Virginia, and Michigan. And now, where appeals courts will have rule on having same-sex marriages recognized, Tennessee, Kentucky, and Ohio. So, I've talked about this on the show before, and it just drives me crazy why this is being questioned so much. So, say that you're in love with someone. Why should you not be able to marry them? I don't understand why somebody would stand in the way of somebody else's happiness when it is doing nothing to affect them. A big reason for this, one of the most frustrating reasons for this, is religion. Not that I have anything wrong with religion. I think it's a great thing. And I think it does a lot of great things for the world and people in it. But when somebody says that they don't want somebody to live happily with who they love because of their religion and because their religion says it's wrong, it drives me insane. There's so many religions in this world that how could you say that your religion is the only one? Personally, if I ever did believe in a God, I would believe that all the religions have the same God and they just worship in different ways or the same gods. I wish that we could all just try to be happy. One of the funniest comics that I think I've ever seen was a picture of Jesus and his disciples, and he was telling them, now love your neighbor as you would love yourself, and, you know, treat everyone fairly. And one of his disciples says, but what if they don't have the same viewpoints as me, or they are gay, or la-di-da? And then the next panel has Jesus saying, did I stutter? I don't understand why somebody would stop. So now, back to the Michigan issue. Schuett, the Michigan Attorney General, filed a petition with the Sixth Circuit U.S. Court of Appeals Friday, asking the court to bypass the usual three-judge panel hearing and go straight to a full appeals court review. This is, again, doing with the gay marriage in Michigan. Attorney General Bill Schuett, in a press statement, said, advancing our case to a hearing before the entire panel of Sixth Circuit judges will move us forward more quickly and minimize delays in ultimately reaching the U.S. Supreme Court. This move also offers the added benefit of conserving taxpayer resources by shortening the timeline of the litigation. Cases are moving quickly through two other circuits, both of which will be heard by three judge panels in the coming days. If the Sixth Circuit grants Michigan's request, it could make DeBoer versus Snyder the first to reach the U.S. Supreme Court, but that doesn't guarantee that the Supreme Court would agree to hear this case. So, what's been going on with this is the Attorney General, Bill Schuett, is the one who is leading this repeal. Even though many Michigan voters are saying just drop it, you know, it's already been done. Even those who are opposed to gay marriage are saying just drop it. Now to move on, let's have some fun news to end the show today. To begin with, ex-Taco Bell interns claim that they invented the Doritos taco. During a summer internship in 1995, Watt and three other college students pitched the idea of a Doritos shell taco to Taco Bell executives as part of an intern competition. They lost that contest, but their idea turned out to be a winner more than 15 years later. Taco Bell has netted more than $1 billion in sales from its eerily similar product, the Doritos Locos Taco, which it launched in 2012. One of the interns said, "I'm sure I signed away that anything I pitched them was their property anyways. I would just like someone to recognize that it was a good idea." Since they did lose the competition, which is funny to think back on. Next, a rare goat sheep was born on an Irish farm. A rare hybrid animal that is part goat and part sheep has been born on a farm in the Republic of Ireland. The animal, referred to as a geep, it was born about 2 weeks ago on Paddy Murphy's farm in County Kildare. The unexpected arrival is thought to be the result of mating between a goat and one of the sheep farmers, Cheviot Hughes. Mr. Murphy said the crossbreeding was not intentional. He described it as a pure shock to the system and said it would be a one-off event on his farm. Bags of mountain air are offered in smog-addled Chinese city. No, it wasn't a scene from Spaceballs, according to the organizer, a Henan-based travel company. 20 bright blue bags of air were shipped to Zhengzhou, capital of central China's Henan province, as a special treat for residents. The air originated from Laojun Mountain, some 120 miles away from the city, and was brought as part of a promotional gimmick to show oxygen-deprived city residents what they're missing. A cash machine is found 15 inches off of the ground. This is an ATM, which is 15 inches off the ground, meaning that users have to squat down or sit down to use it. A supermarket cash machine has been installed just 15 inches off the ground in Nottingham. A Sainsbury's spokesman said the cash machine was installed so low down because it was located on a hill. The supermarket added that it had not had any complaints about the height, but was looking at it moving the machine, thought to be Britain's lowest. Now, one of my favorite stories from this week, Google Naps. Google Maps helps you find your way, but Google Naps, a parody based on the popular mapping service, is helping you to discover the best places for a snooze. A group of Dutch users created the Google Naps to uncover the world's coziest and coolest places to take a well-deserved nap. These napping spots, which included Portugal, China, Indonesia, South Africa, Brazil, and all four corners of the U.S. are shared by fellow users. Let's see if we can find some in San Rafael. Google Naps. Personally, I love napping, and I can't remember why I ever wanted to stay awake during my naps when I was younger. And next, a drunk man is riding a motorized cooler. A Queensland man allegedly caught riding a motorized Esky containing 10 tallies of beer, 2 bags of cask wine, and up to 6 cans of bourbon found himself in trouble after blowing more than 6 times the alcohol limit. The 38-year-old man from Skarnes was spotted by police who were conducting a drink right information night at the Torquay Hotel, allegedly riding the Esky down the Charlton Esplanade bike path about 4:45 p.m. on Friday. Next, a 50-foot snowman. His name is Granddaddy, and the snowman that began as a short pile of snow that simply needed to be moved after a greenhouse roof collapsed is now drawing plenty of people out to gawk in sub-zero temperatures. Exclaimed 8-year-old Daniel Kroska, "I think everyone in the world should see it." In just 1 hour, on Monday evening, a dozen of carloads of families stopped along Benton County Road 3 in Gilman, Minnesota, to get a first-hand look at Greg Novak's 50-foot snowman. "I just want to give him a big giant hug," said Kroska to Fox 9 News when explaining why he tried to climb the giant snowman just minutes earlier. So that will be it for me today. Unless, let me see really fast, see if I can find you a nice napping spot for the weekend. If you want to look at the Google Naps, go to www.googlenaps.info. And if you like the wacky news I just told you, and you want to see a picture of the 50-foot snowman that Daniel Kroska says that you should see, go to uniquedaily.com. This is Penguin Radio. You're listening to radio.dominican.edu, and you've been listening to The More You Know with Pickles. Catch me here every week from 11 to noon every Friday. Thank you, and have a great weekend.